Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 18. On this week's show, we are going to review and go over the PBS documentary Walt Disney American Experience. And then we're going to have a conversation afterwards that deals with the question of, do Disney fans need to grow up? To my left, as always, is Brian. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
See, that's better. Good. Across from me is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. White Magic. That is all little clips and sounds from Sword in the Stone. Have not used it yet. That was the first time I actually used that song, so it was good. I'm always hoping that he puts out a new one every week, but I know it's impossible. So,
get on that, Nick.
We don't have Scott with us today because he is just busy with other stuff, and he actually didn't get a chance to watch the full 4-hour
doc.
Yeah, because
it was 4 hours, so
it was
definitely...
But going back to the Pogo thing, that was White Magic by Pogo. You can find more of his music over on soundcloud.com/PogoMix. His videos over at youtube.com/Pogo, and his home address is PogoMix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter for our Disney Twitter, at Diz Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, do a search, and you can find us for Disney Magic Hour, and we have a little group on there. And then head on over to iTunes and give a 5-star review and leave some kind words, and that is hugely appreciated. It goes a long way towards sharing the show out, as I say every week. So let's first, I actually wanted to tell a little story. There was a big passing this week, if you're a sports fan, and that was Yogi Berra. And a story came out this past week by Michael Kay, who is the announcer for the New York Yankees, and he also has his own show on ESPN Radio.
Yeah.
During the afternoon, he pretty much has the station.
He's the afternoon ride,
Yeah, he's the afternoon ride home, which that's really huge. I forget that he's that popular, honestly. And I love him on the radio. Not so much calling the games sometimes, but, man, he's really good on the radio.
No, he is, because I've listened to his show before, because Francesca sometimes I can't listen to, so I switch over to that. But, yeah, I like him a lot.
So... I will read exactly what he said after the passing of Yogi Berra. I heard a story that when they were teammates in the 50s, Yogi, Whitey, as in Whitey Ford, Mickey Mantle, and Billy Martin all bought these huge tracts of land in Central Florida. And as time went on, each guy sold his plot of land. Yogi, for some reason, held on to his, kept holding on, and you know what? The plot of land was directly in the middle of where Disney World now stands, and Disney had to offer him, Yogi Berra, and pay him an awful lot of money just to build Disney World. And that's the magic of Yogi Berra.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
So one of the last guys who, you know, obviously he didn't, I mean, I guess from this story, Yogi wasn't one of the guys who sold his land to one of the fake corporations that Walt was doing all this and kind of secret to. Yeah. He, you know, was one of the guys who got a price.
That's awesome.
So I thought that was really, really cool. And, you know, Yogi Berra passed away this week. So a little Disney thing. And actually, thanks to Gina Fury for sending that out to me, because I was not aware of that quote.
Yeah, I had not heard that at all.
I passed. I don't know how she found out about it, honestly. Wow, but yeah, she sent me that just this a couple of days ago. And I was, or was that today? May have been
he
today.
He just passed away either yesterday or this morning. Yeah, I can't remember like when it was announced. I think it was yesterday.
It was yesterday.
Yeah,
it was yesterday. So, yeah, it was yesterday or today. She texted me that, and I was like, oh, great, I'll talk about that. So let's get into the meat of this episode this week, and that is we had all seen last week the PBS documentary Walt Disney American Experience. And it was a 4-hour, 2-part documentary that took place, what was that, Monday and Tuesday?
Yep.
Monday and Tuesday last week. And if you didn't catch it, you can stream it on PBS's website. If you want to own it and you don't want to pay a lot, because they are offering a DVD, but I want to say that was $30 on their website.
And it was a DVD, right? It wasn't even a Blu-ray.
Okay. But you can go to iTunes and actually get both episodes in high def for $4 for the total of them. So if you're looking to own a copy of it, you know, something you can access whenever, if you use that ecosystem at all, I would definitely say that's your best route to go. And if, again, if you haven't seen it, 100% check it out on the website of PBS. They have a really nice page dedicated to the entire documentary and a lot of great stuff to read through. Even if you have watched the documentary, I would suggest going over to PBS.org and just look, you know, in their programs, and you're going to see the Walt Disney page. And you can find out a lot of information from that. So you want to, how do you want to tackle this? Do you want to just talk about it in broad strokes?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I took my notes in chronological order because that's as I was watching it. So, I mean, but obviously if we're talking and things pop in your heads, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to talk about just the show first because we've sat through One Man's Dream, the movie at the end, a lot. So I kind of felt like I knew a little bit about him. I wasn't considering myself a master at all. I was going into this prepared to learn a lot of new things, but there was a lot that I did learn, and I was really like surprised by how much they condense and sweeten the movie in One Man's Dream. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. Brian, what was your, what's your just initial off the top of your head thoughts on the whole experience?
Overall, I thought it was really good. It was well done. I did get a lot of information. Mostly the first half was more new information for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the second half stuff is stuff that I had kind of, a lot of that stuff I kind of already knew.
The second part of the episode, the last 2 hours, which dealt with from the strike on, ending with Walt passing, that to me did not. It felt rushed.
It did. That was a
that felt a really
point.
Rushed.
Especially once they got to the Disneyland part.
Yeah.
It really did feel rushed.
Because I know that they cover, you know, some of his, you know, his earlier days and whatnot, starting in the mid-20s and all that. But I felt that the information that we received from, say, the mid-20s to the early 1940s, in the first 2 hours was a lot.
Yeah.
And it was really, really great. And then the second part felt kind of rushed a little bit.
Yeah.
And big swaths were kind of jumped over, but they did focus on a couple of things that I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah.
One in particular being the whole Walt and his trains.
Yes.
Yeah, that was great because that was stuff that I really didn't know a lot about. I mean, I knew his love for trains, but I didn't know that. And I think one of the reasons probably why, at least my guess is, with me, a lot of people didn't know the early Walt stuff, so they wanted to really dig into that, whereas you know if you're a Walt Disney fan, you probably know a little bit more of the later years,
like starting with Disneyland and stuff like that.
So I mean, it kind of makes sense the way they did it, but it definitely to me did feel rushed and kind of just one right after another. It just kept going at the end.
Yeah, I mean, the beginning part I really liked. I liked how in-depth they went and how unrushed it felt. It felt like they really gave you that time to digest all the beginning stuff that happened, which I was totally unaware of how often he tried stuff, and it just did not go well at all.
Go ahead, Brian.
No. I really enjoyed his first couple of experiences and, like, basically how naive he was.
Exactly.
And, you know, to see the person that he became, to see how naive he started off, it was really very interesting, I think.
I felt like he kind of stayed in that naivety, like, most of his time. I feel like
well,
a lot of it he never really... I don't know if he never grew out of it per se, or if it just... he didn't make connections the way that some people would.
You know what it is? You know, brilliant people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times they have a very difficult time interacting with other people, and that seemed to be one of the things. You know, I think you're right. The naivety never kind of really went away, but he did the smartest thing that he probably could have ever done, was to bring his brother Roy into it. Because that's what really... he got somebody who could speak to everybody, who could deal in those things that his mind didn't seem to be able to process.
And who understood him to know that, oh, he's not just being, you know, a grump. This is just
how he is.
Like, how his mind is working right now, you know? Yeah. It's like, yeah. So, yeah, that was a great move.
Yeah, I think the two biggest unsung heroes in the history of Disney would be Roy, number one, and Ub Iwerks, I would put right behind him.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Ub Iwerks was somebody that I was, you know, I'm a big fan of for his work, and I think that without those two men, maybe things don't go. I don't think things go.
Without Roy, I don't think I think it dies before it even gets started.
Yeah, and not because of lack of creativity.
Oh, not because of lack of talent. And but that goes to show you that it takes more than just the talent and everything. You need you need that other part of it. And some people have both parts of it.
Yeah, it's a sweet story to say that all you need is a dream, but you really don't. You need you need the smarts.
You need dream and sense.
Yeah, you need dream and sense. And Roy was a sense, Walt was the dreams, and they balanced each other out beautifully because Walt was the one who was willing to take the chances that Roy wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Roy was also the one who knew that, okay, well, the cliff only has so much ledge, and we're going to stop right now, or I'm going to have to figure something else out.
Yeah.
And the amount of times that they seemingly jumped over the cliff and then found another cliff to land upon on the way down was really impressive. And again, I think speaks a lot to the character. Now, this was what I really enjoyed out of it was we have referred to the idea that Walt in some circles of the pantheon of people nowadays, they may not know that Walt is an actual person. They may equate him. This is something that Lou Mangiello has always kind of said. And the idea that he's a Colonel Sanders type person, you know, it's just an imagery figure. Yep. You know, he's as real as Mickey is. And it's just like Uncle Walt is not really a person when really Uncle Walt isn't really a person.
It is
a character.
Yeah,
but
it's a
damn good character.
But that's what sometimes people like, that's their connection, is that character of the Walt from, you know, Walt Disney Presents, like that kind of stuff. Like that's their image of him, and they don't necessarily know the behind the scenes.
And because, you know, Disney, the company themselves, has gone to great lengths to make
to preserve that.
That, you know, that image, you know, the image of Walt. I've read a couple of autobiographies on Walt, in particular the Neil Gabler one and the Bob Thomas one. So much of what was in this documentary I already knew, but I thought it was a really nice way of condensing and, you know, pictorializing it, basically. And I'm always a huge fan of footage. I'm always a huge fan of old footage.
Yeah.
Seeing folks that I have only read about and then getting a visual, you know, equality to it and being like, okay, that's how they moved. That's how they walked. Mm-hmm. Right. There's something really, really cool about that kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, whenever you see Chaplin out of his makeup, it's like, oh, that's who Charlie Chaplin is.
Yeah.
You know, so seeing Walt as a young man and, you know, getting older rapidly in the documentary in the second part, again, again, feeling a little rushed, it was humanizing. And I don't think that I that's why I like Walt Disney. That's why I have a reverence toward him and stuff, is because he was just a man. He wasn't anything beyond that. He was a man. He was a flawed person, which, guess what? Everyone is. The people who aren't flawed, they're not real.
Well, that's what
you know, like, they're not real people.
Well, somebody they were talking about it in the documentary, how he wanted to be the you know, how Walt would say that he does things that Uncle Walt wouldn't do. He smokes, he drinks, you know, but that's not what that character does. So you have to be able to separate the character that, and I know a lot of people have a hard time with that, but it is a character, somebody he's playing. That's not the person that he was when he wasn't being
Uncle
Walt.
That's not his work person.
Yeah, because he was kind of that with his daughters. Like, it was definitely like that type of...
That's the thing.
Well,
like,
you know what the thing is? He had, like anybody, he has multiple hats. He was very good family man. And I found it very interesting because they were talking... Not that he was a good family man, because I knew that. We knew that already. But that he was... He kind of was the motherly figure more with the kids, and his wife was more aloof and stuff like that, which a lot of times, especially at that time, those times, it definitely was the other way around.
Yeah.
And how he was that way with his family. And then he was Uncle Walt for TV, But running the business, he was somebody else. He was the boss.
Got to be the boss.
And there was a great quote one of the workers that he had for him had said that was one of the historians had said, a lot of geniuses have one great idea. Walt Disney, and they get one thing right. They have a great idea and they get one thing right. Walt Disney got a lot of things right.
Yeah, I think that was Gabler.
Gabler. And, you know, in order to do what he did, you couldn't be a nice guy. You can't be to get stuff done. I could never do that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of like his, like, you know, I'm not like that. You are more like that, I feel like. Like, you could, you know, you get that, you can get, you have that side to you. I don't have that side to me.
Yeah, I have no problem doing that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know,
you know how to get things done, and I'm more like...
Well, I learned that. I mean, I don't know if I was like that before, but when I was in film class, when I was at school, I realized pretty quickly, one half of this class wants to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
The other half of the class is here because mommy and daddy had money. And they thought this would be a cool thing to do, is to come to New York. Well, I don't come from money. I didn't have mommy and daddy's money. I took out a loan. So anyone who didn't want to do the job, anyone who I felt didn't understand the job, get away from me. Because all you're going to do is waste my time, which I said this on the Film Basement. One of my favorite Walt Disney stories is in the Bob Thomas book. And they were in a pitch meeting, you know, guys, you know, trying to basically suss out a story. And someone, they never said specifically who, I don't believe in the book, basically went counter to the idea that was being pitched around and said, well, how about, what if we do this? And went into his little spiel. And it even, you know, they describe Walt the same way, you know, they do in the documentary, in the book, where he just kind of waits and puts his hand to his, you know, his hand like to his temple and kind of taps around a little bit. And he just turned to the man and said, you just don't get it, do you? And then went right back to what he was doing. And
they actually brought that up in the documentary.
Really, that specific story?
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow, I totally missed that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because that line that he said, you just don't get it.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. I actually forgot that was in the doc as well. But
well,
yeah,
there was so much. It was so
yeah.
Dense.
There was a lot of good stuff. And yeah, I don't. You cannot get creative stuff done with a legion of people leading a legion of people. By saying please and thank you every time, you have to just do the work. Now, you might find that odd, though, when you say, well, people, you know, they say they loved working for him. Why would you love working for a man who was so hard on you? Because the guy at the top can be demanding for perfection, but if he is always a step ahead of you and you understand that and you know that, you know what, if I put the effort in, I'm going to be part of something that people long after I'm gone are going to enjoy. That's what you remember. You're not going to remember I had to work a 12-hour day, like, you know, for like 3 months. When it's all done, you're going to look at something and go, "Man, look at that."
Yeah, it's like the product, you know? It then will speak louder than...
If the product doesn't turn out well, then you lose morale and, you know, and everything like that. But I think he also had the right amount. He had the right kind of people, because even if a project didn't financially hit, that did not make it a failure to the people who worked on it.
Right.
Because let's say like Fantasia, you know, didn't make money and whatnot, but it attracted a ton of artists because they were like, that's what I want to be involved in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the financial part wasn't the most important thing, even though ultimately for a company it is. But, you know, goodwill out. That's how it works. You can, as long as you put out quality, it's going to get noticed eventually. It might take a while. And in Walt's cases, a lot of times what he did was really beyond the intelligence level of a lot of the public.
Yeah.
He was on a different level.
Well, I liked one of the quotes they said early on with him, like when he first was going from making the cartoons, you know, from Mickey Mouse and Silly Symphonies to going to Snow White, and he was pushing everybody hard and, you know, doing the long days and everything like that. And he like emphasized, we're not making cartoons.
Yeah.
We're making art, you know, so he even saw what they were doing as above what everybody else was doing. And I thought that was really great, because you have this person who holds whatever, you know, product is coming out in such a high standard, then he pushes his workers to achieve that high standard. And then, yeah, then the sustainability of that product for years to come, it does, it holds up. You know, I know sometimes when we do the movie reviews and we say, does it hold up? I really think most of the movies we're going to say, you know, from this era anyway, yeah, they hold up because
the 50s and 60s are pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, it built an empire.
Yeah, it did.
It built an empire. About 25 years of films, of feature animated films, are things that in 100 years are still going to be showing.
Yeah. I saw a really cool little outline, and it was breaking down like the almost the decades, but they broke them into like eras, and it was like, you know, the first five were the golden era, and then it was, you know, and then they got to, you know, the Renaissance when it comes back to Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast.
In the late 80s, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just, like, really great stuff.
Actually, really late 89 into the 90s, yeah. I should say, because Little Mermaid was 89, and then we were into a new decade.
Yeah.
This was something that, for me, as a Walt fan, this was just, I can now watch this eternally. I can just put it on.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Just put it on, and you know, find little nuggets here and there that maybe went by you a little too quickly the first time. Mm-hmm. I will speak to, though, towards, as much as I enjoyed this, there was a lot of this. Walt felt, or Walt thought, and unless that's coming from someone who directly worked with him or is a family member, I always take that stuff with a grain of salt. Yeah, you can make logical leaps in where, you know, feeling pressured, feeling this, feeling that. But when it comes down to the inner thinkings of a man who didn't tell many people his inner thinkings.
Yeah, no.
I'm not a big fan of that in documentaries.
I hate, yeah, that's one thing I do not like.
I do not like that. Neil Gabler tends to do that. He tends to lean on that pretty heavily.
Yeah.
Now, his book is not loved by Disney fans and Disney Company in particular because he tends to look at the darker side. Where, I won't even say a darker side. You know what? Sometimes it's just the human side.
It's a side, yeah.
You know, that's how he framed the book to, you know, to really focus on that stuff and not so much the Uncle Walt stuff. But he was also incredibly passionate about his love for Walt Disney at the same time.
Well, you have to, if you love something, you have to take the good and the bad.
Yeah, I have a Black Sabbath tattoo on my leg. Yeah. I am well aware that Ozzy Osbourne is a maniac.
Yeah.
But you know what? It is the music. It's one of the first. It is the first record I ever purchased was an Ozzy Osbourne, you know? And, like, that's what it means to me. I take all the dude's bad stuff, and I'm okay with it. If he murdered somebody, well, I would have a lot of trouble with it.
You know, if they did something horrible, that's different. But you have to, you know, I thought it was very humanizing for Walt. It made you see he was just a person instead of this mythic figure.
Yeah.
You know, that he had fears and that he had, you know, worry and stuff. Like he
a bit of paranoia too,
especially once they get to
the Red Scare.
The Red Scare. I mean, that was, you know, a little to me. I didn't realize all that. Like, but he was very the strike. That was the most information that I've gotten on that because I didn't really know a lot about that.
That's an interesting film that I think someone could make.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about that. I thought that was really interesting.
It was really interesting. And I think that's where a lot of people were having problems with the documentary because they thought it put Walt in a negative light, which I don't think it did. It put Walt in the light that he was in, that was the way he was. And if you listen to it, it's his speech. They give his speech. That's him speaking. It's not somebody paraphrasing. That's what he said. It's things he did. This was all in, like, it wasn't like made up in this secondhand knowledge. Like, he was, you know, he did not handle that correctly.
Yeah,
and it was, but you know what? He's a human. And it was a turning, really big turning point in his life. It really, they talk about it in documentary, but it really kind of almost broke him.
Yeah,
because I think that was the point where he kind of realized, because I think even just a little bit before this, he still wasn't realizing, like, his company had grown so much and it wasn't just his group of, you know, boys anymore. And I feel like he lost a little bit of that, you know, close family. And, you know, they told the story of how one of the Ink and Paint girls passed out from hunger because she was trying to save her money and wouldn't eat, you know, and I feel like that would be something that Walt wouldn't think of because for him, like, oh, everyone's like right here. Like he might not necessarily have been connected to all the tendrils that were now in that big mm-hmm. studio. So I feel like that was kind of like when that strike happened, he wasn't fully aware that people were upset with the conditions because he wasn't aware of the conditions.
That's speaking towards, go ahead, Brian.
Oh, no, go ahead, Pete, because I've cut you off like three times.
I cut people off more than I can count. That's speaking towards what you were saying before, the naivety. Yeah. This would really be the biggest example of it. But again, it's a human reaction.
It's a human reaction.
Because he got very large, very quick, very young.
Yes.
And to be able to keep an eye on everything while things are growing so quickly is an impossible task. Mm-hmm. And unions, at that time, you think they're rough and tumble now? You have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, they're not.
The unions now are children
yeah.
compared to what it was in the 40s. And when that first wave of unionization, which, by the way, was completely necessary.
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
When that was happening, people didn't know how to react. And especially somebody who saw themselves as leading a family.
Yeah. Well,
you know, this was a betrayal of thoughts. And, I mean, coming from someone who's me, I'm very touchy about if I feel that someone's trying to do something against me, mm-hmm. I can only imagine how I would react if half the people whom I employed and I thought were happy doing what they did, if from literally 1 week to the next, I learned no, and they don't like you.
Yeah.
That would be crushing.
Yeah.
And my reaction would not be half as... I mean, Walt had a rough reaction to it.
Oh, his was bad.
His was bad.
That was bad. That speech was bad.
But compared to what I feel I would do in that situation, mm-hmm. he was saintly.
Yeah.
So, you know, it all has to be taken in perspective.
And it has to be taken, like we said, in perspective of the times. That's yes. the thing. You have to take things that happen in the account of the times and the state of mind of people and the state of the country and things like that. You know, this was... Unions were not a thing, and now they were a thing. Yeah. And what I found interesting and what I would have loved to have known is where Roy was with all of this, because Roy was always kind of the one who, like we had said earlier, was in touch with everybody, with more of the working man. Say,
well, he was there because I know, like when Walt left, he kind of like. Made everything okay.
Well, that's what they say, is that really Walt needed to get the hell out of there.
Yeah. No, I understand. And he's the one who, again, saved multiple times. He's basically saved the company, Roy. Yeah. I wish they would have said, or maybe he wasn't involved at all, where Roy was during the beginning of all this, why he let Walt, not that you could have stopped Walt, but why he let Walt do what he did, why there wasn't, like...
You just answered your own question, though.
Yeah. But, I mean, at least, like, Roy tried to talk to Walt, you know, nothing.
I'm sure it happened. Yeah, I'm sure it happened. It was just, you know, was something that didn't...
But I just thought that was, you know...
Roy could have been on the top with Walt, you know. I mean, they had their offices, you know, on the third floor or something. Maybe Roy also wasn't as connected with the plight of
that's definitely possible.
No, of course, that's definitely possible. So,
But I think Walt's reaction to it and seeing it as a betrayal was much harsher than how Roy would have just been like, oh, okay, they just want better, you know, wages and hourly, you know.
Well, they said Roy basically gave them everything that they wanted.
Yeah.
When he negotiated with them, he gave them what they wanted.
Yeah.
Because he knew that's what they needed to do.
Yeah. I thought the interesting part of that whole, like, acquisition of the studios was all done when Roy wasn't around. It's like...
Oh, the building of the studios and whatnot?
Like,
oh, okay.
Walt just went out and bought the studios and started making it when Roy wasn't around.
Yeah.
And then, like, all this stuff started happening with getting a lot of workers and then getting disgruntled workers. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, I thought it was interesting.
Something you couldn't have gotten away with today, because there would have been an email sent out. Like, hey, what the hell? Are you building a whole studio, like, while I'm out of town? Yes.
Nope.
Yes, I am.
But that's what I really learned in this, is how intricate Roy was and how important he was to the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was really good. I thought it was really well done. And, you know, like I said, I don't think that that's where I think a lot of people had problems with the documentary, at least from what I've seen online, was Walt's portrayal, especially during the strike. You know, and I don't think I don't see anything wrong with his portrayal. It's the way it was.
But I guess we're going to kind of get into this a little bit. this goes into my second kind of question towards tonight's episode. Do Disney fans need to grow up a little bit? And I don't mean that as in, because I had somebody misconstrue the question.
Yeah, I saw
Come
that.
On, Chris, for crying out loud. We know each other. I don't mean it towards, you need to grow up and not, and get over this, like, I enjoy going to Disney thing.
Yeah, no, it's not
What that. I mean by that is, accept that things are not fantasies. And things will change, and you have to accept change. And Walt Disney wasn't the perfect human being because he was a human being, but he was a damn good human being. I mean, it doesn't, you know, all that other stuff.
No.
Like having a temper and being driven and being like, that's not negatives.
No,
that's positives.
That's how he got to where
he got. Yeah, I was going to say, that's what led to everything that we love.
Yeah.
Was that.
I read one person in particular, they wrote down, I read on the internet that this was a very biased thing. And I'm a very, like, okay, let's break down everything that's included in this sentence and let's see how much sense this makes. You're citing the internet as, like, the beacon of truth that this is very, very biased. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's made by a very well-respected documentary team that's been doing this for decades, that holds no water. But the quote-unquote internet, that was the thing that gave you all of your correct information on this?
The internet is always right. Don't you know this?
Yeah. Then, you know, whatever,
you
know.
It does come from, like, a very interesting, you know, going, like, education-wise. There, when the internet started, there was a naive look at it first, where it was like, everything on it is accurate. So when people say stuff on the internet, now we're in the generation of when people say stuff, then they must be saying what they know, which must be true. So it's very, not a lot of people make the extra step to do fact checking or do the extra step to, I don't know, watch the documentary to actually see if it's biased.
Well, that's the thing to me. Like, if you watch that documentary, you couldn't have watched the documentary, or you couldn't have understood what you were watching, because it literally had Walt's testimony, like when he was doing the thing before Congress, it was there. Walt's voice, Walt's pictures of Walt, you know, everything. The same thing with the strike, like, that was all.
But somebody who is very protective of an ideal in their head, you can sit them down and show them hard evidence of something, and they will look straight ahead, but their eyes will be going around the screen.
Oh, no, I completely understand that. No,
I
definitely.
I mean, Melissa, towards what you were saying with the, what was it a couple of weeks ago? I saw people sharing, like, Mars will be the same size in the sky as the moon. Yeah. It's like, you are out of your mind if you think that is a realistic possibility.
Yeah.
You would literally have gravity change on Earth if that happened.
People don't read. That's the thing. People see a headline, people see a tag, people see something, and they don't investigate. I mean, I had this with one of the friends on Facebook.
But it's Mars.
Well, you know what?
People don't understand how that works.
The same thing.
But you know what I think it is too. I think the internet is the home of the gut reaction.
Yes.
Everyone, the second they see something, they hear something, they have to share it, or they have to be outraged immediately, or they have to defend it to the death immediately.
Yeah.
That's what
everything is the worst thing ever or the best thing ever. There's no middle ground. Yeah. But I will say, so I put this question towards, and it bleeds into other aspects. Okay, so I saw a lot of people get very upset about documentary, claiming it's bias, claiming it's inaccurate, and then having no sources to back any of that up, or any, you know, anything that would contradict what was said in the documentary, because it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Again, though, I don't take anything that was in documentary as a negative. I take it as, I feel like I know more about Walt.
Yeah.
And that to me is cool, because a lot of the people that I admire, it's because I read about them and I know them very well. And not that I know them very well, but I've read about them, so I'm at least well read about that person. And learning, even finding, like, the simplest similarities in mannerisms or the way that they handle certain situations, it makes me feel better. Well, I'm like, oh, okay, you know what? This person is on top of the world in very many aspects. But damn it, they have a hard time falling asleep at night. Yeah. You know, yeah. So mm-hmm. that's great. You know, it, yeah. it makes them more relatable.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially with the one with Walt that really stuck out to me with that is all his success, not until Mary Poppins was nominated.
Yeah.
Did he actually feel that he got the validation from the people he had been seeking it from his entire career?
Yeah.
And this is Walt Disney, yeah. and he was insecure.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I love that.
It's great. It makes you understand that. It also says a lot about people who are creative.
You guys are nuts.
Well, do you wonder why? Because the goalposts that maybe someone else sees are not the one I see.
I know.
I don't think a lot of
creative people around me. You all are crazy, but I love you all because you have a very unique viewpoint. I think that's great.
I like for me, getting to half the alphabet when you're trying to get to Z, that means you failed. There is no I got halfway there. No, it either works or it doesn't. It's either done or it's not. That's it. That's the two options. And does it have a negative effect on me? Yup. But does it help with other stuff? I don't know. I hope. So we had a lot of people, react like this. But I will say, what I was trying to get to before, a lot of people didn't. And they were like, nope, this is how the man was. And you should really embrace this and not fight it so much. It's a great thing. But it led me into my brain kind of turning and thinking of, we had a very active month with Disney news as far as closings, openings, some stuff going away, changes here and there. And I noticed a very immediate pattern. Now, granted, you can take this pattern and apply it to anything. Mm-hmm. You can apply it to any pop, anything, and you will see the same reactions. But we're just going to focus on the Disney crowd because I feel the Disney crowd is a lot of older folks. It's 30s to 50s. Those are the majority of cats that we tend to see in these groups.
Yeah.
Maybe even like late 20s. And let's just start with the Osborne Christmas lights. Okay, the Osborne lights are coming down this year for the unbelievably obvious reason that Star Wars is going to be built. Everyone was saying construction in 2017 based on nothing. Again, that was stuff that someone wrote on the internet and then everyone thought was real. I don't know why anyone would think that they're going to let Hollywood Studios stand as it is without doing construction for 15 months. That would be mindless.
Especially when they have the 11 acres and the 14 acres for Star Wars and Toy Story. Like, you have 25 acres that you have to build.
Yeah,
like,
they're not waiting 15 months
to
do that.
They need to get on that.
Yeah, that's... I still stand by what I said before with the building. It's going to happen quicker than everyone thinks. And so that was announced, and I read one person put down, my kids live for this show. It's like, do they really? I mean, is it really that? I mean, if your kids go to Disney and they don't see that show, are they going to never want to go to Disney again? And do your children enjoy Toy Story? Do they enjoy Star Wars at all? Even if they don't. I mean, I enjoy lands and park and things on attractions of properties I do not care about. I, for one, don't really like Cinderella. I think it's kind of straight down the line. I have the same thing with Little Mermaid. It's kind of straight down the line. It doesn't really do anything for me. I think that attraction, though, is fantastic. I think that castle is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I don't like cars. I can't wait to go to Cars Land.
Yeah.
My interest in one doesn't affect another one. So I understand we're losing the lights, but if you have to stop for a second and say, okay, but we're going to lose the lights, but it's because they're building Star Wars Land, which is going to attract multiple millions of people every year now. Mm-hmm. Instead of people who are saying, well, Magic Kingdom's kind of busy. I guess we can go take a look at the lights at Hollywood Studios. Because even if there is a group of people that go to see the lights, that's the reason they book their trip. Even if there are people, that's not a lot of them. It's not enough. It's not in the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. And that's what Disney Park, that's what Disney World relies upon. Not 500 dedicated folks.
It's the crowd that will come for Star Wars.
And it's like a hard realistic take that you have to be like, nope, it's not all fantasy and dreams. This is a business.
And even in Walt's life, he knew that. He made the animated movies and he loved them, but he saw they weren't doing anything for his company. So we had to do like nature documentaries. I'm sure that wasn't what he wanted to do. Like
he also built, this is something I've brought up before. He built Disneyland featuring a castle of a princess that you would not know for another 4 years. Why do you think he did that? He was promoting it.
Yeah.
That was an act of promotion. Let's make believe that there's a new princess on the horizon. Their movie isn't coming out for 4 years. Disney announces a new theme park, and that princess is going to have her castle be the centerpiece of it. People would lose their minds.
Oh, yeah.
They would say that they were being disrespectful towards the history of Disney, and he would be appalled if he heard this. That's a term I hear a lot because everyone knows him so well. But the man did it himself. Mm-hmm. Did you see all the merchandise that they pushed out for Snow White?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
They pushed that out on everything.
Well, even, like, with the initial, like, stuff with Mickey Mouse, and, like, that was what kind of where, like, things started with, like, the licensing and stuff, and, like, they had to call in, like, a really well-known marketeer? That's not a word.
It's okay. I know what you mean.
Yeah, that's somebody who
marketer in Disney is a marketeer. Very well. Yeah. I can do that. Yeah.
Someone who worked in licensing products.
And he was very smart and got them really on track. And yeah, like then they knew like this is where like the money is.
That's how Star Wars did it. Star Wars, when the first Star Wars film came out, they had no idea.
Yeah.
Actually, Lucas to this day basically makes Steven Spielberg a ton of money because of a bet. Spielberg was coming out with Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Lucas was currently producing Star Wars. And Spielberg said, your film's going to make more than mine. And Lucas said, I bet you it won't. And he bet him points on the film. And he lost. So to this day, Steven Spielberg makes money off of Star Wars because of a bet. Because he knew this is going to be the big thing. It's not going to be mine. Because he understood, like, this is going to be the... So they didn't know that Star Wars was going to be big. Mm-hmm. And then when Star Wars came out, there were no toys and figures. So they sold coupons to get toys that will eventually release.
Wow.
And then they finally came out. And it was only through all of that that Lucas was able to go on his own. Star Wars, those are independent films.
Right.
Which is insane to think about. But they're independent films, and he did that with merchandising. He didn't do that, again, by being a nice guy. He was like, gotta put this stuff on everything because everyone's going to buy it.
Yeah.
Because
you know, get this out there.
That's what people do. They buy. You know, so, they like something, they want it, they buy it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to bring in Star Wars. You're going to bring it to Toy Story. You're going to lose the Christmas lights. You know what? It's not even a trade-off that someone in a position of financial interest and even just like, what are people going to be more interested in? Like,
even the creative people.
Yeah, if you just go to a creative spot, you're like, guys, do you want Christmas lights or do you want to build Star Wars Land and Toy Story Land?
Yeah, it's hands down.
But like, let's figure out where that vote's going to go. And to lighten it for a little bit, just stop and think about what's going to happen in Toy Story Land during Halloween and Christmas. Because if you think that there isn't going to be something going on there, you're out of your mind. You know they're going to. Star Wars, you probably can't. They did an awful Christmas special, but it's not the same thing. Go ahead.
You know what I find, I always hear the biggest argument with, especially with the Star Wars thing, okay, is, and the documentary, I think, really nailed this point home for me. Everyone always says, it's not Disney. Star Wars isn't Disney. Okay? It was created by somebody else. All of the ideas, not all of them, but a lot of the ideas Walt had in the documentary were based off of fairy tales, folk tales.
Yeah.
Honestly, everything he had, for the most part, was based off of something. Then, of course, he took it and did his own thing with it and whatever. But so if you're going with that logic, nothing is Disney. Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
But Mickey Mouse, not really, because it was kind of based off of Felix the Cat, who then he turned into Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, which made its way to Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
So Mickey's not even really Disney. If you're going to look at it that way, don't look at it that way. That's stupid.
Yeah. Mickey was the necessary lateral movement after losing Oswald.
Yeah.
And he was an improved version of Oswald.
Yeah.
But it's an evolution of it. But yeah, they're Grimm's fairy tales.
Yeah, they're not wholly original ideas. Yeah. Not that he didn't do, you know, what he didn't do with them was fantastic, but, you know, Star Wars was not thought up by Disney. That doesn't mean it's not Disney. I don't get it. I don't understand that argument.
But that's a huge argument
that people have about it.
But even so, like, Hollywood Studios, like, it's supposed to be themed around movies. If Disney happens to own now the whole, you know, Star Wars thing, like, that's now part of, like, the studios. Like, that's part of, that should be part of that park. I can understand if people are getting upset if Star Wars was going in Magic Kingdom. Okay, that
which
might
it is not. In Disneyland.
Yeah.
Well,
it's going into Disneyland, in Tomorrowland.
But that would kind of make sense. You know, they're not putting it in Fantasyland. You're
also,
not going to have...
at the current, Tomorrowland is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, unfortunately, there's not much else going on there.
Yeah.
So
that's the
works.
Same situation in Florida.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have something to talk about with that with you. But, like, okay. But yeah, it's like, you know, if it's themed well, if the purpose is there, you know, like I don't understand. Like, also, great movie ride, like... That's not all Disney.
You don't even have to go to that. Let's talk about something that Disney never talks about.
Oh, Song of the South?
Song of the South.
Yeah. Yeah.
Song of the South is a blacklisted film, basically, by Disney.
Yeah, oh yeah.
One of their most popular attractions is based on Song of the South.
And I love that song. I really wish we could get that movie.
Well, you can, quote-unquote.
Yeah. And you know what they talked about in the documentary, that basically what wanted to do is Disney, he had brought people into the cartoons, you know, like... when he was doing the Alice short, like that was his original idea. But now with the park, he wanted to bring people into these fantasy worlds, into these cartoon-like settings and everything. That's what they wanted. That's what they're doing with these lands, these other lands. You know, it's I don't understand that argument, and I know we all of us seem to not get that argument. We don't really see it, but it's a big thing. You see it all the time. I see it on all the message boards. It's not Disney. This isn't a Disney thing.
I think those people just say those things because it will get them attention, and I don't know if they really believe it, but I also think that a majority of the actual Disney fans understand that argument is...
Yeah. Well, you know what it is? It's like anything. The people who yell the loudest are the people that are complaining.
Yeah.
You know? If you ever try and find help online for anything, you know, or try to get a review on something... Half the time you would think every product is the worst product ever made because that's all that the reviews are. That's all the people that are talking on things is because they're complaining about them. So it's hard. It's hard to piece that out.
Yeah.
What the numbers are sometimes.
Yeah. So we had the Osborne lights.
Yeah.
There was another thing that happened just recently.
The popcorn?
Yeah. The popcorn is changing from Orville Redenbacher to Pop Secret.
I didn't even know it was Orville.
And this again is like a slap in the face of the classic Disneyland parks. Guys, it's popcorn.
Was Orville
and you know what? Huh?
Was Orville like their first brand of popcorn?
I guess so.
Probably, yeah.
But unless you blindfolded can make five different types of popcorn, put them in front of you, and tell me what taste each one of them is, it's not a valid argument.
Some people can, but...
It's a silly argument.
It is very silly.
It's silly to take to the hills for that one.
Yeah.
Like, again, the, oh my God, they're ruining the parks. This isn't ruining them. This is a sponsor. Like, that's all it
people
is.
People would probably have the same reaction if they went from Coke to Pepsi. Like, people would do the same thing.
I said they should take all the Coke out and put Beverly in everything.
I'd be okay with that.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Just to troll everybody.
That would be a great April Fool's Day.
The Day of Beverly. Yeah. That would be good. All Epcot is all Beverly.
All Beverly all the time.
It'll take years to get that out of the pipes. They have to close the place down. So there was that. And then there was also the news this week. And again, I feel like a lot of this, if you just stop and think, the picture will come a lot clearer. There is a lot of scuttlebutt about Star Wars weekends.
Yes.
Going the way of the dodo. And again, oh my God, why are they ruining Star Wars weekends? Like, wait, stop. You can't have a weekend or six weekends, however many it is, in a place that is now 24/7, 365, that theme, and make it seem special. The only difference now between that park, what's going to be eventually, and Star Wars Weekend is the celebrity guests. Yeah. That is not enough to make a thing out of it. What they have to do is come up with something even bigger. And I'm sure they're going to, but it's not going to be called Star Wars Weekends. Also, the major films... I don't know if they're going to do anything like this, but the major films no longer come out in May.
Right.
The main trilogy, I believe, is going to be coming out December. The other film is going to be coming out in May as well.
Oh,
so
yeah?
Yeah, I believe so. But, you know, the reason that they happen in May is because that's when Star Wars came out, May 25th, 1977, if I remember correctly. That it's no longer a thing now for a whole new generation. So, that, you know, they may shift the date just because it's, you know, they have another time where they're like, oh, you know what? attendance in Hollywood studios really lulls in the beginning of December. When's those movies come out? December 18th?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, right now, like Star Wars Weekends happens towards the end of the school year, you know, late May, to late May to June. That's the end of the school year. So for people who maybe weren't going initially to Disney during that time, it was a nice little pull to get people there. Well, if you have Star Wars Land there all the time, you don't need to pull people for a specific event there.
You're going to get them all year round.
Yeah, so like you said, if they do a special thing for a special, you know, but for the slower parts of the year, I mean, now... school time's out, Disney's packed, even when school's in, Disney's packed. So, yeah. I mean, you really have to find those very lull moments, and that probably will then turn into something, you know, for the special times of that.
Like, if I put in front of you two options, okay, I'm going to put two things in front of you. On one hand, you're going to have Star Wars Weekends, which is for six weekends of an entire year. Mm-hmm. We are going to have some extra... a lot of costume characters walking around, you know, photos and whatnot. Going to have a couple of Disney-themed dinners, some guests, and fireworks. Mm-hmm. Right? And some exclusive merchandise. Oh, yes. On the other hand, I'm going to give you literally everything I just said, minus the guests, plus a 14-acre land to walk around, two additional attractions. Which one do you want?
No, I want those weekends.
You just want the weekends, right? Yep, you don't want the park and you don't want the attractions. That doesn't outweigh the weekends.
No, the weekends are special.
So that's the disconnect I don't understand. Yeah. And I was having a conversation with somebody who vehemently believes that the Osborne Christmas lights bring in more people than a Star Wars land would for a year of attendance.
No,
I can't even. No. I don't even know what to say.
Like, no. This is Disney's Harry Potter.
You might not. The thing is, everyone has to remember. You might not be a huge Star Wars fan. Star Wars fan might not be a draw for you, but it's a draw for millions and millions of people
globally.
Yeah, internationally.
Globally, Star Wars is like honestly one of the biggest things in the world, one of the biggest names.
It spans so many generations.
I can't think of another.
I don't know if this movie is a hit, it's going to make $2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to become the number one film ever.
Uh-huh.
And if this movie is as good as it seems like it's pairing up to be, mm-hmm. there is no bigger franchise.
Maybe Marvel. I don't even think so. If it hits the way it's supposed to.
No, I completely agree. Because, actually, I mean, I don't know.
This spans, not that Marvel doesn't also, but this has the 40s and 50 year olds, people who grew up on it.
Yeah.
And now,
even
the younger kids. My son's been a huge Star Wars fan. He's 8. He's been a huge Star Wars fan since I showed him Empire Strikes Back when he was 5.
And my aunts and uncles are huge Star Wars fans, and they're in their 60s. So, I mean, you have. Three generations.
Yeah.
Also, Rogue One's coming out December of 2016 also. So.
Oh, that's December as well. Yeah. Is episode 8 maybe a different day? Maybe episode 8 they moved to May? You know, me and Jeff were talking about this when we went to the game a couple days ago. And he was like, I thought that they moved episode 8 back to May. Which maybe he's right. Maybe I didn't know. I said I don't know.
We had talked about this before maybe on the film basement because the thing is that slot for May is already taken by Civil War.
But so I don't that think might in 2017 be why there is a Marvel thing.
No, I think that's why. It's because they already had the dates in place for this phase of the Marvel, like for those.
So they had to move it around.
Yeah, they had to move it around and not. They didn't want to move Marvel, I guess, out of that spot.
So episode 8 is May 26th, 2017. So they actually are going back to that kind of more familiar release date.
But now I wonder what they'll do because then 2018.
Awesome. That's only a year and a half between. Yeah.
Then 2018 and 2019 in May are the Infinity Wars Part 1 and 2. So it's like, yeah, they had Civil War this time. And
here's the thing.
I know.
If these films are good.
It won't matter.
It's not going to matter.
Yeah.
People will literally go and get their ticket for the 12 o'clock show to see Star Wars. And then get their ticket for the 3 o'clock show to go see Infinity Wars.
That'd be awesome.
And then they'll be back the next weekend.
Yeah.
And that's why these films are going to make $2 billion.
Disney, I saw episode 1 4 times in the movie theater. And that movie was horrible.
Yeah.
And I saw it 4 times in the movie theater.
Yes, it absolutely was horrible. It was. Without question.
It was.
And we're going to be putting ourselves through that very soon. If you guys don't listen to the film basement, and again, it's adult language and whatnot, starting the first week of November, we are going to be watching and doing an audio commentary on all 6 of the existing Star Wars films, starting with A New Hope, ending with Revenge of the Sith. I said that backwards, yeah. Starting with Phantom Menace, ending with Return of the Jedi.
we're going the actual order.
Yeah, we're
going
to actually go in order. So if you're interested in that, that'll be happening in November. So you know, let me read some people's reactions to this. And I put this up in a couple of the pages that we think. And again, it was kind of, you know,
reassuring.
Reassuring. Thank you, Brian. That many people do agree with the idea of you need to just grow up a little bit, you know, this. Someone, this is, I don't know if I want to say their names. I won't say their names. It starts with this post will probably be deleted for whatever reason. Then he goes on. However, it's always amused me how offended people are willing to get for something that at the end of the day is a business that they have no control over. Very true. Now, I understand the Disney community has a piece of ownership. They feel like they own things.
Yeah.
And if you have a favorite attraction and it goes bye-bye, you feel that you've lost something of yours. But so has everyone else who's ever come into Disney since it opened up. It does not look like the 1971 Disney World, and surely Disneyland has had some changes since 1955, many of them under when Walt was running the place. Right.
That's the thing. It seems like a lot of Disney fans seem to take things personally. Like, it's geared towards them, like it's a personal attack on them.
Oh, you liked that? Well, we're going to take it away.
Yeah,
now.
And that, I notice that. That's a very big thing in that group, you know, and we're part of that group. We're huge in those circles.
The idea that Disney is like twisting their mustache, like, oh, this is really popular, so I shall delete it from history. It's like, no.
Yeah.
They take down stuff that isn't popular.
Yeah, that's the point.
Because if it's not bringing in people, it's not working. That is why you're getting an attraction. Like, let's talk about Maelstrom for a second again. Maelstrom, you know what? I remember it. It was a cute thing.
It was fun.
It wasn't a great ride. This wasn't a classic. This did not show the history of Norway in such a global spanning bubble. There were trolls. There was a giant bear, an oil rig. You were out of there.
It was an air-conditioned slow ride in a park where if you're out in the sun or you're out in a rainstorm, it's nice time away.
It was nice. And I understand that the Frozen thing, you don't want to see properties in Epcot, then I assume you don't like many parts of Epcot, but you haven't ridden it yet. I hope it's not just a straight movie ride. I really do.
I don't think it's going to
either because of the new songs that are introduced and whatnot. I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm very curious to see what they're going to do with that. Going on, change is inevitable. People do need to grow up. Do not need to grow up, but not really. If things never changed, for some people, Disney would grow old. If Disney didn't add new attractions, Star Wars, Frozen, etc., people would then complain that there wasn't any of those things. Some people like to complain and get their panties in a wad. I enjoy all that Disney has to offer and look forward to whatever they think is up next. The reactions are not justified. I apologize. I'm reading these for the first time. And then I get more people just saying, you know, personally, I enjoy change. I think it fits with Walt's visions of the parks.
Exactly.
Something he said was, it's always going to grow. It's always going to change. Marty Sklar, it's not a museum. This is not there for people to have a nostalgia moment.
No.
It's there for you to enjoy the new stuff and have your nostalgia? Make new memories with people.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this with many other things. It doesn't take away your memories that you had with it. Just because it's gone doesn't make those memories. Maybe Maelstrom was your first ride in Disney, so that's why you're sad to see it go. If that was your first ride in Disney, I'm sorry. But then, like, you know, but that doesn't take away that memory. Just because something is taken away, you know, doesn't change that. But I feel some people think that it's gone, so now my memories are gone with it.
Oh, and that
my feelings are gone.
That was another thing that got people in an uproar, that Disney has announced that they're going to make a Mary Poppins sequel.
Yes, that was the first thing that no one read.
Yeah, because that was in the article.
Yeah,
it's not a remake. They're
no
not,
one read that.
And again, even if it was, I don't care. Because, they're going to make another Mary Poppins, a character that has multiple books written about her, and why not them? You know, why? When the second book came out, do you think people were like, you're ruining the first volume? They probably were. So, they're going to make a new one, and guess what effect that has on the original? Nothing. It does nothing.
Yeah.
If you love the original, great. You know what? It doesn't matter. The new film can come out. It can be utter garbage. And guess what happens then? Nothing. You don't have to watch it. No one's going to force you to watch it. You can just go and watch the original Mary Poppins. God knows if this movie is terrible. That's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to go, ugh, let me get that taste out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Let me go sit down and watch the original, you know, at home, beautiful high def, and I'm going to be really happy.
Yeah.
Or the movie's great.
And then you have
another film to enjoy.
Yeah.
You don't lose anything. Like,
I don't understand.
Disney can make 1,000 films a year. And if they're all terrible, it doesn't matter because it doesn't affect you.
Yeah. It's like the perfect thing when they were doing all those, you know, straight to DVD sequels, you know, like Lion King 2.
Garbage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
Yeah. Aladdin 2, I mean, that was probably the worst because it didn't have the proper voice for Genie. But it's like that still didn't make the first one bad.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not like if they came out and said, we're destroying all evidence of Mary Poppins. Ever having existed.
And this is the one
all the copies. We're burning the internet so you can't you can't download it anywhere. And we're making a brand new Mary Poppins. Yeah. Then I can see you being upset.
Yeah, then that would make sense. And you know what? That's where a lot of justified hatred goes towards George Lucas.
Yes.
He doesn't allow the original that people saw in a theater to be available for purchase. He only allows the special editions with the added footage and the changed actors and the changed voices and the silly effects that were thrown in on top of effects. There's no option for that. They can go get a crappy DVD, which on TV screens now gets, you know, put in a box within a box. It looks really terrible.
Yeah,
it
looks bad.
But, you know, that's what it is. You don't have, don't worry about it. It can be terrible. It doesn't matter. Guess what? Alice in Wonderland. I hate that damn movie. The Tim Burton one.
The Tim Burton one, yeah.
Hate it to death. Think it's terrible. I don't care. I watched it. I said, this is a bummer because I was really looking forward to this. And then I said, oh, yeah, but I guess I have Alice in Wonderland, 1951 classic.
Yeah.
Catherine Beaumont, I believe they did not take her vocals out and put in someone else's. We're good to go.
Yeah, it was the same with me with Maleficent. I didn't particularly care for that movie.
Yeah.
I loved Sleeping Beauty, but it didn't like destroy the animated film for me.
Yeah.
Like I
it
just
has no effect. Yeah. So it's you're either going to get more stuff that you love, or one thing that unfortunately you're not going to dig, and you're not going to have to think about it ever again.
Just whatever.
If you don't like Frozen and you feel like Frozen's being shoved down your throat, then you better not look forward to Disney ever releasing a movie and it making money. Because this is exactly what will happen the next time and the next time and the next time.
Yeah.
How many spots is a Little Mermaid in the parks?
At least 3.
Well, how many times is Aladdin in the parks?
Aladdin, not as prevalent.
Aladdin has a ride in Adventureland.
He's got the carpets,
yeah. The carpets.
He's got the flying carpets in Adventureland.
Yep.
That's
it. Does that make sense to anybody?
You're on an adventure?
Yeah. That makes no sense. But are people like walking around tiki-torching that place?
No, that would be good, though.
I like that. I like what you did there.
But, you know, that's it. It's okay. It's not going to kill you. You know, if you should be appalled that Aladdin is in places that he shouldn't be in.
Yeah.
You know,
Can I tell you the best joke that Aladdin told me one time?
Wait, like the actual Aladdin?
We were at a meet and greet with him and Jasmine.
Okay.
And we told him that we were from New York. And he said, that must have been a long camel ride.
That was the best joke he said? What was the worst one?
I don't know. That was my favorite.
Oh, my God.
This is why Jungle Cruise is also my favorite ride.
No, that's okay. Jungle Cruise can be your favorite ride. And, okay, here's, you know what? Let me throw the gauntlet at you. What if we notice Jungle Cruise is not getting any more foot traffic? And they say, this is in 10 years, whatever. And they say, you know what? Jungle Cruise is going to be leaving. We've got something else that we want to bring in there. We're doing a new Indiana Jones movie. He would fit perfect in the Magic Kingdom. And it's going to be a riverboat ride, Indiana Jones styled. Brand new stuff, you know, new animatronics, everything. Top of the line. What's your reaction, Melissa?
Where can I still get those jokes?
I don't know what that means.
The skippers.
Like the butterflies whose wingspan goes from 1 foot up to a whopping 12 inches.
Answer the question now. What would you like? How would your reaction be to that?
That would be my reaction. I'd be, you know, bummed that I wouldn't be there, but I would miss those jokes immensely. But you know, whatever.
It's indie.
I mean, it's not like you're going to be like it's, you know, some random, you know.
Even if it was a property you hated. You know,
I mean, I'd be disappointed, but I wouldn't like not go.
Yeah. I mean, that was my Adventures Club. Yeah.
Exactly. That's
great. I love the Adventures Club. It was really, quite frankly, my favorite place to go in all of Disney World. It was my favorite place to go. It closed, and I was really bummed. But then I stopped and I said, wow, no one really spent any money in there. And they were in there for like 8 hours each, and I was one of those people.
Yeah. Especially you, because you didn't drink.
Yeah, because I don't drink. No wonder this place is closing. Like, yeah. How can they possibly pay all the upkeep for this joint when people are just setting up camp all day because it was great, you know, and that's what it is. Although I am 100% believing that we're getting a portion of the Adventures Club back.
I think in two places,
but you know what?
Yeah,
that's two places. But that's part of it, too. If it goes away and they see that the demand is there or something like that, they probably will find a way to work it back into the park.
It will find its way back. I do believe that. I think that they've done some exact wording in the Hangar Bay and in the Jungle Skipper Cantina.
Right? Yeah.
I think that's it, yeah.
And that's... You're using too specific wording to completely ignore the most obvious thing. Yeah. So... You know, keep your eyes open for that, guys. I think you're going to, if anyone, you know, like me, if you were disappointed in the loss of the Adventures Club, you're going to get it back in some fashion. Not the original fashion,
no.
But maybe in some fashion.
But unfortunately, if you're a fan of mannequins, I don't think that's coming back.
No, mannequins is not coming back. I had one mannequins experience.
Yeah.
Well, you needed.
You know, I'll tell you, then we're going to call it a night. My magic experience was this. I didn't go to Pleasure Island dance clubs a lot.
Yeah, I never did.
One night, I went to literally every one of them with a group of friends, and I went into Mannequins, and I had no idea what the place was. I just figured it was another silly dance club that, you know, evidently it had a rotating floor. I remember that.
Oh, yes, the rotating floor, yeah.
So I went in there with this friend of mine, Mary, and we were in there, and we were dancing, and I'm like, what is different about this place? And, you know, this floor was spinning and there was a lot of blinky lights, so I didn't notice it. And then I was like, oh, I'm the only one dancing with a girl. I'm the only man dancing with a girl. There's a lot of men dancing with men. And I was like, oh, that's why. You know, like, it was this moment of, oh, that's what this place is. Okie dokie. Because I picked up on it immediately. I'm like, something's different. Like, something, we stick out for a really weird reason right now.
Yeah.
And it dawned upon me quite quickly. I was like, all right, maybe it was just that night. I don't know.
Yeah, it could. I never went to any of the clubs there.
I don't miss any of them.
You know, and I know some people probably love them, but I never went. I never even stepped foot in.
Again,
in that area.
If you put like, you want like an 80s dance club, or do you want Morimoto's of Asia?
I was just going to say.
I would hit you with a mallet until you built Morimoto's of Asia, whatever it's called. I can't wait to go there.
Yeah, I know.
And spend way too much money on food. So, all right. So, I don't know. Give us your feedback on this. I mean, we've gotten a fair amount of feedback, and it all tends to lean one way, is that there's just that group that instantly gets offended by everything, and they're going to shout the loudest over other people. But it was nice, and it was, as Brian said, it was reassuring to hear all the people who were like, no, man, we like change. We want new stuff. We understand when things go away, it could suck. You know, like, you know, if the Jungle Cruise ever left.
Oh, yeah.
If the Carousel of Progress leaves, I'm going to be really bummed, because I feel like that's a piece of Walt Disney history.
Well, you were a little bit bummed when the animation, the art of animation and the one, forgive me, is One Man's Dream going, or is that still staying as of now?
It can't stay where it is.
No, it can't, but as of now, it's still there.
Now, it's still there. Yeah. I don't believe there's been an official announcement. There's no closing date. There's nothing like that, but it can't stay where it is, because it's going to be in the middle of Pixar Land, Toy Story Land. So they may move the location. I feel that it would fit brilliantly on Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah.
I think that would be a perfect location for it. It fits the mood. It fits everything, the era. Mm-hmm. But if they got rid of it completely, I would be bummed, but I'm not going to be like, well, they've ruined Hollywood Studios, because Hollywood Studios is ruined right now. You know, it needs help. If they got rid of Carousel of Progress, again, I think that should go with One Man's Dream into a permanent location where that film at the end is One Man's Dream.
Yeah.
I mean, is Carousel of Progress. Yeah. I think that should be the where it all leads up to.
Yeah.
But if they got rid of it, I'm going to be bummed, and then I'm going to move on.
I did have something I wanted to talk to you before we close.
Okay.
And going into Carousel of Progress, Tomorrowland, I thought it was really interesting how Walt initially wanted Epcot to be. I knew, like, the whole name of Epcot.
Did you not know that?
I didn't realize how much he wanted it to be like a actual town, like an actual neighborhood, and this place where the companies are there, like developing stuff. And then I thought it was really interesting how that very idea was pretty much translated into the Tomorrowland, the movie. Like, that's kind of what they did in Tomorrowland. Yep. So
did you ever see the, well, you've been on the TTA, right?
Yeah.
You ever see, you ever really take a close look at the original model for Epcot?
That's the thing. It goes by so quickly. I've never really, like, looked at it.
All right. When we go in December, we will. And I want you to get a picture in your head of what the city in Tomorrowland looks like.
No, yeah, they had it on the documentary, and when they broke it down and stuff, and I was like, oh, yeah, I was like, okay, well, that's the movie, and I, like, I think that's so crazy, because they were telling you how he was telling Roy, like, you know, this is what I want it to be, and, like, how interesting would it have been if that's actually what Epcot was? Like,
yeah, it would have been incredibly impossible, yeah. You know, like, you gotta, it's a whole thing that goes into, like, voter laws and, you know, everything, like, of a town happens then within a town that's being run by a corporation. It's a crazy concept, but I don't know if he would have ever been able to pull that off.
Well, they kind of have that now.
What do you mean, Golden Oaks?
No, not even Golden Oaks, but like the reason they're able to do certain things and they're able to get projects pushed through into things because they have like their own, it's basically their own like zoning laws, their own board, and their own
No,
but I'm just saying. But they have
a modicum of it. Yeah, they do. They have a smaller version, legally of that.
Yeah, you know, they have their own fire department and their own all that other sort of thing. That's all them.
I just thought it would be really crazy, like if that's what, like if he maybe didn't pass and he actually got to build or attempt to build that, like, what would have happened? Would it have gone terribly? Like, would he have had to change it? Like, I'm like interested in the history of Epcot now, because that was really like.
Well, he was not very good at coming up with a figure and hitting that figure. No. So I don't know if he would have, because he probably would have been like, oh, it'll be $50 million. And that, now that's like $250 million in Walt money.
So yeah, that's a fascinating thing. There's a lot of great books on Epcot that you should take a look at.
Definitely. But I thought it was cool how that then made it into the Tomorrowland movie. Like, that's what Tomorrowland became, was pretty much his Epcot.
It's coming out soon. A couple of weeks, I think, on Blu-ray. I think it's in October, I'm pretty sure.
There's a lot coming out in October.
Yeah.
Aladdin.
Yep. On the Diamond Collection. Yeah. That, with the Sapphire Collection. I forget which one they're calling. I think it's Diamond Collection. So we'll definitely be getting that, because Dre still has mine, and he's somewhere in Australia with it. So I'm never going to get that back.
I'll have to go visit him.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed tonight's show. Don't take what we were saying before as like attacking or burning. It's just start looking forward to things, man. Well, if you worry about things so much, it's silly. Just look forward to things. Guess what? The popcorn being different, if that ruins the park for you, you got to find something else that you really enjoy in that park, because maybe you're going for the wrong reasons. But hey, to each his own. I shall look forward to the new stuff coming in. I really cannot wait for some of the new stuff to come in. And I look forward to living long enough that I see even more changes and maybe even a fifth gate.
That'd be cool.
I want a fifth gate.
Yeah.
I want one. So let's say goodnight. Right now you are listening to White Magic by Pogo. You can find his music over on soundcloud.com/pogomix, his videos at youtube.com/pogo, and his home web address is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. Find us on Facebook. If you do a search for Disney Magic Hour, you'll find a little group there. Hiccups. And you can also find us on iTunes, search for our name, and then hit that subscribe button and a 5-star review. Be very, very helpful. Very, very helpful indeed. Say goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Brian.
Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Pete. And say goodnight, Pogo.